Surprise! It's me again. Last time you heard from me, I made a big announcement that I'm not continuing with the podcast and I'm starting to do other things. And here I am again. And I want to kind of share what happened between then and now. It was about a month ago or something like that. Basically, what happened after I published the last episode, or actually while I was publishing the last episode, I felt that I'm not yet 100% complete with this decision. But I had already spoken to Yandara about it. I had already kind of made up my mind that that's what I have to do. So I went forward, even though I wasn't 100% sure about it. And then I realized, after I had already announced it, that maybe things don't have to be black and white. I thought it's either I'm doing the podcast or not doing the podcast. And it is true that I'm ready to build a few things that I want to work on here in Israel and focus on other things also. But I realized that it wasn't exactly the right time for me to leave the podcast, because I love having these conversations. I love having this source of inspiration. I learn so much from the conversations and I just enjoy doing it so much. And what I realized was that the editing part of the podcast was the part that was hard for me to do and was kind of causing me to feel this resistance towards it. So I decided to use the help of an editor, a brilliant new concept, but it didn't really occur to me only until after I made the announcement. And here we are. I decided that it doesn't have to be black and white. There are different shades of gray, and that we're just going to continue in a different format now. There's an editor working on the podcast, which is amazing. It frees up a lot of my time to work on other things that I want to work on as well. And yet, something really cool that I kind of alluded to in my last episode is that Christopher is going to join me in hosting the podcast. So this week, I am releasing an episode with the amazing Bolo. That whoever has been to Yandara knows Bolo. He's a figure there with a lot of influence and presence. He is an incredible teacher and storyteller and, you know, just a wealth of information. So this episode was recorded about 6 months ago when I was at Yandara, and honestly, the episode kind of got lost, and now I found it, so I'm releasing this episode. But from next week, we're going to have an episode with Christopher as my co-host, and we're going to kind of explore different ways that this project can go on, whether it's the two of us interviewing or having a conversation with a third teacher. Maybe Christopher will have some episodes by himself, maybe me. Different formats of conversations, not necessarily interviews like we've been doing so far. And definitely more interesting subjects. So thank you for being here. I hope this is a nice surprise for you. I'm very excited for this. And I'm looking forward to see where this project continues and how it develops and grows. So without further ado, let's get into the episode.
I think of it how you put something on. You wear it. You wear an idea, you wear a feeling, a sensation. You literally get in that mindset, feeling like a ride. Like you said, we're taking a ride here. So you wear that and you feel, how does it feel? You know, well, if it doesn't feel good, you know it. If you don't understand what is the cause of suffering, what are you doing here? How do you turn that into a blessing? The trick, if there's a trick in it, is
Welcome to Curious Ones podcast by Andara. I'm Yael Ginsberg, the host of the podcast, a yoga and meditation teacher and philosophy lover. Each week, you will hear eye-opening interviews with the different teachers of the Andara Yoga Institute, located in beautiful Baja, Mexico, along with other teachers that pass through here. This life-changing knowledge shared through authentic, heartfelt communication will help you live a happier, more fulfilled, and connected life. Let's dive in. Hello, welcome back to Curious Ones podcast by Andara. I'm Yael Ginsberg, and I'm honored to have Bolo, the legendary Bolo, here with me today. Bolo is an integral part of Yandara. He's been here since very early on. He is a yoga philosopher, storyteller, and musician, and just around super interesting person. So welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you.
So I'm so happy we're getting to do this. And I actually thought you would be the perfect person to speak with about something that I've kind of experienced in my life in a few different situations and has come up. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of the concept of, well, first the concept of abundance versus scarcity. Mm-hmm. So would you please start by explaining just what is like an abundance mindset, a scarcity mindset, and how do they relate to one another?
Well, I've had both. I entertain both and have for a while. So I do feel like I've come out of that scarcity mindset. Well, you just need to have scarcity in order to understand abundance. Mm. I think that's what I've come to. The more I've gotten into that notion of there not being enough, I've been proved to me countless times that that's just an idea, mm-hmm. that there's not enough. But if you give enough attention to it, even though you're surrounded by all the things you need, you can still feel like there's not enough.
Right.
And that is the driving force of people. You know, it's the donkey with the carrot. It's like, there's not enough. And yet they could be carrying loaded gold, you know, in the mm-hmm. side packs, you know, and so I think that is the issue. It's like there is enough soon as you have a sense of being grateful. It's sort of they coincide, like the sense of, well, look at what you have. It's like, see all the tools you have, see what you have. You're not starving. I'm not. So I think that's the trick. As soon as you find that you're going, I wish I had this and no, no, no. You realize the weak feeling of it. Mm. It feels weak.
It does.
It does feel weak. Mm-hmm. And then it also, where it leads, once you invest in that thought, even a little bit, it leads to more, not enough. Mm-hmm. And whereas you just start pulling your attention towards, well, look what I've got. You know, I've got a garden. I've got, and you know, it's like, now I've got too much stuff, which is the case. Like, where am I going to put all this stuff? Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not about stuff. It's clearly about where your attention is. And that if you have a grateful attitude, a guy with a dollar that discovers it in his pocket that's been living on the street is rich and probably feels more wealthy for that moment than someone with $1 billion that wants 10 or mm-hmm. whatever. So clearly it's a mind thing that goes back to maybe not being nursed when you wanted to be, or whatever, emotionally starved for, you know, again, you know, you want your parents' attention, your friends' attention, so you're not getting that, like that really visceral feeling of like being valued. So it comes, I think, to one's self-value. If you value yourself, like that's your real commodity, your what you give to the world. If your attention is that, it's like you couldn't be fuller or more abundant if your mm-hmm. attention's there. If your attention's on everything you don't have. So it's, it, I think what it comes to is realizing you, yourself as an part of this. And when you do, you go, I have everything. The only thing that's keeping from me from that is mind that is, I've gone with, you know, I've let my attention be drawn. So the trick, if there's a trick in it, is developing that muscle, that mental muscle that you use to bring yourself back to feeling and being grateful for all the things that you do have. Mm-hmm. Even, I mean, of course it goes, you know, like there's so many people that are the walking wounded, you know, the classic wounded healer, which we are addressing that, the original wound where we feel like we got separated. Mm-hmm. Cut the cord. And it all has to do with mother, which is odd in a strange way. Mm-hmm. Comes to that for me. That's how I tracked it, is you have this sense that your mother self or your, how you got here, if that was crimped in any ways or constricted, that flow with, you know, your source, like it's mom. What do you do when you're cut off? You cry. I need to be fed. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, what do you want? Is like, you want that again, because you were directly connected. There was no like thought of that happening. So I think that's what it kind of stems from that. And cause I know people that wasn't a thing.
Mm-hmm. Like the connection with their mother.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was not a thing. However, you know, the play of it is, if you didn't have that, you wouldn't be able to be helpful in the world. If you don't understand what is the cause of suffering, what are you doing here? Mm-hmm. It's like, we're here to, I think we're, that is the key, is like, can we look at the lack that we felt and see that that was really, how do you turn that into a blessing? Mm-hmm. Like, that is the key, is taking all of our experiences that have ever happened to us, good, bad, and different, and turning that into a beautiful thing. Because that's our gift. This is what we've been given. Mm-hmm. We've been given all those experiences to then turn it into the thing that you love.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you turn that into a love expression? Gratitude. I'm thankful for all that, because I wouldn't understand what people are going through. I wouldn't understand it if I didn't experience those things.
Yeah.
So
I think you mentioned the causes of suffering, and definitely one of them is the feeling of separateness, or maybe that's even the root of all of the other ones. But that is something that I really notice a lot in day-to-day life, let's say in a more modern society than Baha, you know. There is a pervasive thought that if somebody else has, it means that I have less.
Right.
Or that me, I need to get over somebody else. And like, just this competition, like a friend of mine was speaking about, like, she became a wedding dress designer and her friend also became a wedding dress designer, and then she copied her. Like, yeah. And then she was really mad at her for like going in the same field, as if she's the only wedding dress designer in the world. And as if, like, if she's successful, it means that she's less successful or that there's less for her. Like, you know, this feeling that if somebody else has, then I have less.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say about that?
Well, that's a good one right there. Because yogi or not, you know, like you could say, actually what happens in a yoga community like Yandara or anyone is that becomes more pronounced. The more aware you become, the more you aware of it in yourself first, you know, like how that takes place. Again, it's like, It's a self-study of the ego. Like another musician will come to you, Yandara. And fortunately, through the practice and just playing a music, you realize that what makes something amazing is the inclusion.
Hmm.
Because instead of a trickle, you have a flood.
Yeah.
So that's what I've found for me is very simple, is that I would rather be enlarged by someone else's presence and their perspective, because that's expansion for me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the larger ego, you could say, or the higher self is all about inclusion. Because if just go back to that basic principles, everything's one. Well, yeah, but what does that mean? Mm-hmm. And it's, well, we're included.
Yeah.
So it comes back to that value thing. If you value yourself and you value the gift you have, then when those petty things pop through, and I think probably the trick of it is we don't want to, I don't know if you'd say admit or acknowledge that this is a thing. And what you say, like, well, I'm a yogi, I'm immune to it.
Not at all.
So what happens when envy, you know, or jealousy, or what are these lovely little things come through that you can practice? That's where it's full, where yoga is a full-time thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going, instead of, you know, in the morning you do your yoga and meditation, you're all good, but then the rest of the day you kind of forget about it. Well, the point is that churning up that you do, the sadhana or practice, then now it's got you've created a flow through thing. So it's going to come to the conscious mind now. This it's not even the imperfection. It's just the way this world runs. You know, envy just becomes another way of, you know, you bring yourself back to abundance, because you only envy if you feel lack.
Mm-hmm.
If you feel like someone has something that you don't have,
then you don't.
Yeah. So it's like include them, just be inclusive in your mind or heart. And then all of a sudden, instead of this competitive, that creates a competitive atmosphere instead of a cooperative thing. So which one do you want? Which one lets energy move? Yeah. I think that's the trick. What will get the energy moving when it's a standstill?
Yeah.
And because what happens is in the competition, you don't see potential. You don't a bigger potential.
Right.
You might see how you could develop your, you know, increase your ego about it.
Yeah.
See, that's where that road leads.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you're into envy and the competition, then you have to be better than, more than. Like you said, or you're going to take the opposite side of that ego journey and be less than. Mm. So you're going to always in that swinging back and forth.
Yes, definitely. I think that there is this interesting thing that happens, because when we move our gaze to where somebody else is, then actually we're distracting ourselves from where we want to go.
Yeah.
And we know that from, like, running. If you're looking at somebody else, you're going to lose the race. You have to focus on just, not that it's a race, that's not maybe a good example for this situation, but the moment that you shift your gaze to somebody else, you lose your own path. And I think that something that's very interesting to realize here is that when we're working together, we expand our power.
Yes.
I think that's exactly the point, that when we feel that we're alone in this and we're separate from somebody else, then we only have our own power.
Yes.
But once we realize that we're in it together, even if we're on separate lanes, kind of,
yeah, yeah.
having more people doing what we're doing is fertilizing the grounds that we're working in.
Absolutely.
And I think you brought up, you mentioned it in the perspective of even yogis, which is kind of the people that we're talking with.
Right.
And I think also here it's so easy to get into this place of scarcity that, like, if there's many yoga teachers, then there's less less offering
right.
for me, or less students that I can get, or less space for me. And I think that really is a dangerous trap, because mm-hmm. once we put ourselves in this kind of mindset, then that's what we create.
Absolutely, yeah.
And realizing that more yogis means more people becoming conscious and being attracted to this type of world and mm-hmm. this type of mindset. And it actually gives us more, it expands the world
right.
that we're in, that changes the whole experience for all of us. You also kind of mentioned greed.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was, that also is really interesting. It's another cause of suffering.
They're one of the big five.
Yes. Yeah, like attachment to somebody, something. Thinking that having this will bring us joy, not having it will not bring us joy. So to somebody who, well, I'll frame it a little differently. It's no debate that our society values people with wealth
mm-hmm.
and like conventional success. How would you explain the concept of non-attachment and the effects of greed to somebody who's really caught up in this world?
Again, both I've had. So I'm a case study of all of these things, which again has been, part of it has been, you know, I hate to use the cliche words like denial or whatever, but these are things that happen. And mm-hmm. I think what underneath the, you know, the banner of greed, lust, pride, greed, anger, and attachment, those are the big five, right? Mm-hmm. In yoga, where these are the things you must get rid of. And then you go, well, what does that mean? And you go, well, you got to experience them to know what they are. Because like we're going on this ride. We go on come into this world, we go on a ride and have an experience of all these things. And if we, in our sense of purity, go, it's like that old saying, lips that touch liquor shall never touch mine.
Oh. Just,
yeah, that's an old poster or something from the anti-alcohol movement. It was like, yeah.
Wow, like in the prohibition times?
Yeah, yeah. It was like to steer people away. Anyways, the sense of purity, blah, 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 you know, so boring. I've always advocated for celebrating life rather than the denial of it. Mm-hmm. I tried a little bit of, you know, to be the austere fellow, you know,
mm-hmm.
and did, you know, fast and this yoga thing and that yoga thing, yeah. All of which leads to this sense of, who's doing this?
Mm-hmm.
The big who, you know. And it's like, of course, well, I am, you know. So we always come back to this, the central. We're dealing with ego central and ego not. I just mean, you know, there's so many ways that you, like, okay, let me back up a little bit. So attachment.
Mm-hmm.
Who gets attached? I do. So we come back to this sense of when you're feeling attachment, overwhelmed by attachment and the things happening in the world, again, we use this sense of coming back to who is feeling it. Well, I am. And it's like, well, then you start undermining, you start digging out that sensation of, well, why? I mean, what is in it for me? And so this whole sense of looking, self-reflecting becomes the ongoing thing we're doing. So whenever we start like wrapping ourselves in something or cloak, I think of it, how you put something on, you wear it. You wear an idea, you wear a feeling, a sensation. You literally get in that mindset feeling like a ride. Like you said, we're taking a ride here. So you wear that and you feel, how does it feel? You know, well, if it doesn't feel good, you know it. You're the one. It's like, well, that's so you can take it off. Mm-hmm. So when you start looking that why do sometimes I feel like this and it's uncomfortable, and then other times you don't feel that feeling. You feel good. Well, which is the constant? Mm. So returning to the constant, which is I am, you know, without any of that clutter, without any of that limitation, which, because as soon as you put something on, you know, you feel it, headphones, clothes, whatever, onto this body. So the whole idea is our problems come because we have a mind, body, ego that functions quite well until you start inhibiting it by putting it on these like dampening sensations. Like, okay, there's a flow of energy coming to everybody. It's coming nonstop, round the clock. What makes an individual different and what attaches them to their sense of self is their limitation. They go, well, I'm this, that, and other, all these things, you know. Mm-hmm. So each time you crimp or constrict that flow of energy to become a person or to wear a certain feeling. Like, for example, when they build dams to get water, right, to store water, all that energy is coming down. They dam it up. Now, what happens downstream? Now man's controlling this flow and then making electricity from that. So what was a free-flowing river now before is stopped, mm-hmm. and then it's distributed to houses, to light, to all these things. So you see, it's like there. Not only do we have a personal ego, then the collective ego, this group of citizens or souls, now is sharing that. And there is an ego sense that is not now just an individual, but like a collective idea.
Yeah, because it's agreed that money is good.
Yeah. So then you have, so now as a yogi, though, you, instead of just going all in for that collective idea or narrative, that when questions, how this happens, like, how does the ego put this on? And like, is it real? It's not me. Because, and the classic example is when you're in deep sleep, you don't know any of this. Mm. It's gone. There's no such thing. Mm-hmm. So it's a fabrication, and it's in agreement with the world we live in that this is so.
Yeah, but when you have it, it feels very good.
Yes. And it's, and the only thing that you, what makes people feel they don't have it is, again, the individual, the way they grew up. So again, energy's flowing through everybody. Now, at a very early time, if that was impinged or constricted in any way, what that does, it makes a print in the mind. Body then stores all that, like the body library, and then that person then identifies as that. That's like, this happened to me. So again, all these memories collected in this body library, they then pop up when and react, which the reaction solidifies the experience. Mm-hmm. So then that constriction, as a person grows on in life, more constriction, job, relationship, all these things forge mm-hmm. a person
yeah.
that is out of necessity to keep going as that person has to be attached to all the things that that person is made of, all its memories and all that stuff. So our attachment comes to what will happen if that stops. Mm-hmm. Then you cease to exist. Mm. So that fear keeps the attachment firm.
You cease to exist as you know yourself.
Right. Mm-hmm. So yoga takes the other, yoga or unity, inclusion, all of these, those feelings and thoughts dissolve that other idea, the false idea. Mm-hmm. And it's frightening to an individual, no matter who they think they are, that that is a natural process. So it's natural unless you've embedded yourself in these beliefs that these are the things to be, do, and have.
Yeah.
If that's important to you, then you're going to feel attached to your ideas, et cetera, et cetera. You'll feel it again. And all the big five, that's where they come in, because then you need to defend this fortress of your ego, mm-hmm. that it's important. Mm-hmm. It's really important that you acknowledge me, yeah. right? Et cetera, et cetera. And so I think the tricky part of all of this is that to be open, to be vulnerable, then you need to look at these things. Mm-hmm. As again, when someone's, that's why I was saying about they earlier, they, or this phantom idea of a collected group or mind that holds this together, is a very ego-oriented. And again, I'm not saying downing ego. It's a function.
Yeah.
And so rather than damn it or anything, it's like, well, just make it good. Mm. Just, you know, use it for as intended, as a functionary of a higher power.
So what do you see the function of ego being?
Keeping organizing shit. Yeah. You know, and like, it's like your identity in the world, but you don't need to own, it doesn't need to be, it's like a calling card. Mm-hmm. She could say, my name's Yale. I'm doing podcasts. That's like, you know, it's like, this is how you function. It's like a bridge to get things done. Mm-hmm. Now, if your ego become, again, so it's a function of getting from here to there, of doing things, accomplishing, you know, carrying on. But if your ego becomes self-important, you start not including because you need to defend your personal territory to the degree that, you know, you see it. We all do it, you know, in a certain way. It's like you growl. People get bothered. It's like, like, oh, it's okay, you know. I think if you accept it all or do your best to just go, this is what's happened. Here I am. I think, you know, like that makes it work for me. Mm-hmm. Is that like that? My son used to say, "It's all good." While he was, you know, doing something he shouldn't do, you know. Or I, in my estimation, in high school, he goes, "So good, Dad." And I'm going, "Yeah, but maybe not that great," you know.
Yeah. And that's why I'm suspicious.
Yeah, but I love the slogan. And because I think it is, you know, and it's like, if you look at the, my most recent song goes, some things are getting better, some things are getting worse. Some say it's a blessing, some say it's a curse. Mm-hmm. Contrast, it's just a game of words, trying to make a balance of things seen and heard. Mm-hmm. Night and day, black and white, evil and good, some say you should, some say you shouldn't, some say you should. So we're living in that world, yeah. where it's always been, to my estimation, Things are getting better. Things are getting worse.
Yeah.
Now you take those words away, and what is it? It just is.
Yeah.
So, and because you need the contrast, day and night, black and white, all these things. We're living in this mirrored world. And at the same time, we're here to experience that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the acceptance and the allowing of this experience to take place, and willingly, because we wanted to come here and do this,
mm-hmm.
that we just accept as is and allow and say yes to it.
Yeah.
You know?
So the same also with scarcity and abundance.
Yeah.
Like two separate or opposites.
Yeah.
That help us find the middle.
Yeah. Like I was saying April the other day, I want to get a new amplifier, right? Because mine blew up. a little amplifier. It's not so. So I've been going, trying to look online, typical, you know, like there's a zillion of them and all the specs and the, you know, you can, all of that. So I said, April, I'm thinking of getting this amp, but I don't know if I want to get it sent down because it's like $90 just to send down a $350 amp. And I go, I could just get it. She goes, oh, don't be scared. Don't be have a scarcity mindset. I go, no, this isn't a scarcity mindset. It may be years ago, it would have been, but no, I'm just thinking that I don't want to waste. I did grow up with a frugal father, you know. At the same time, I really see that I'm content with very little.
Mm-hmm.
So thank God for that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very happy with, I like living outside. I like, you know, simple for me works good.
Yeah.
And so if I go, oh, it's going to cost 90 there, then I'm going to take it on the airplane. It's going to charge me for that.
Yeah.
I go, why should I waste that? When I don't really need it until I get there, I could use it in California or whatever. So, but you see, it's like, so we, when you have a partner, you bounce these things back and forth. And at the same time, like, it's like, there is, I do respect that part of me or whatever that does that. And I go, oh, I'm like not feeling abundant. It's like, no, I don't like to waste.
Yeah.
So if I don't really need something right away, I'll just like let it flow in another way, and it's like cost less. It's just less all around, less movement. So I kind of think of more of it as a not a money thing anymore, and more as of how I feel, how it flows. What will create a good flow rather than I need it right now. This immediate thing. It's like, I don't need it right now.
Yeah.
Totally fine. I have an amplifier. I have 2-3 guitars. I'll be like, as soon as I turn around, I go, I got so much stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it kind of just does that.
Mm-hmm. You know? I like that idea of what is keeping me in flow.
Yeah.
So maybe we can talk about abundance. How do you define abundance? Is abundance having a lot of money? Is it like, how do you see abundance?
Abundance, yeah. Abundance. Well, I think the most abundant thing the most abundant feeling to me is just that full feeling, you know, like I'm complete. I'm a whole person. I don't need anything.
Mm.
It's just like I feel whole.
Yeah.
That's abundance. Any lack you can see is just again the ego just doing back in the game of mirrors, you know, like oh these you know you see what you don't have, you look around and you go, that is just the mind outward turned.
Yeah.
And when the satisfaction or contentment comes from a whole feeling, like a complete sense of oneself, and then so to me, it's simple like that. Just
yeah.
It's just feels a feeling of completion, like that. I know that the world is not going to satisfy me. I know Facebook is not going to, because I see this happen all the time. You look on Facebook and people are just spilling their guts. I'm going, is that going to help on Facebook? I don't know. I go, I guess. So I think abundance, I feel Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, God dang. I have some friends that go, you can do that on Facebook? Why? I think, and it feels, you know, like abundance also is that you want to share that with other people. I think there's a feeling of like, abundance is an overflowing thing. For me, it's music and just hanging out with people. Inclusion is becoming a very important idea to me. And it was my teacher, Baba Hari Das, would say or write that just, you know, I remember asking him in the beginning of a retreat, like, all these people are going to be coming and I'm on staff, kind of a new experience for all these people. And because just meet people without fear, sing, dance, and play. That was his whole thing. Just do that. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, okay, I can do that. I can meet people without fear. It's like, so I became a, even in my when I had a restaurant, the same thing. I loved cooking food for people, but the main thing was the direct connect. Mm-hmm. And so I just made that the important part for me. Mm. Is I feel like the sense of abundance is increased, or that feeling of abundance is increased the more you share it.
Yeah.
And, you know, of the last few years, I've been involved with different friends in and around this area. And whether it's open mic thing or community, some kind of gathering of people where that just, it feels like it increases the abundance. It's like we're celebrating each other by hanging out. Mm-hmm. And you see that the narrative in the contrast of that feeling is this other glaring stupidity as a backdrop for what, you know, in the world, trying to convince what, now this is where the ego of an individual, if you want to know how stupid things can be, look here first, right? Because if you can see how you could do it, you can see how to take it apart. Mm. So this is where they come in. So this, there, to me, that's like a cancerous, I thought. It's like it spreads because of ignorance. And so when an idea or a group of cells adopt a certain attitude, they become an other. Mm. And they become an invasive other. Yeah. Right? Yeah. So what happens in the world when that ego, if you say, okay, you're blowing up your own ego into this the world ego. So in order to see how that ego structure is made, it takes, you know, first you have to have all these thoughts about yourself that are limiting. Or you can see how you do that. And then you go, now if you blow that up into the world and you can see how, if you take that kind of negative or lack approach to things, then of course, you see, the world needs to be steered that way in order that I can preserve myself. I don't want to lose you here.
Yeah.
Anyway, in order to preserve myself, I need to create a sense of lack in order to maintain this idea. So that's how the ego or how the world is created, what's going on right now in our evolution is a people or a population of the planet.
Or governments.
A government, yeah. It's like government. Ment is mind. Mm-hmm. It's like govern the mind. So if you think of the United States, originally, you know, there's all this talk about, oh, the Constitution and all these things. Well, the United States is not a fact. The United States is a vision. Mm-hmm. And an idea, a vision that came to this group of people that were rebels. Mm-hmm. And this group of people conceived of, and we are they, by the way. We are those people that did this. And conceive of an idea that is inclusive, United States.
Yeah, but it's interesting because it's inclusive to its own people, but exclusive to other people.
Well, that's not the original idea, though. See, this is the thing. It's like why it's not a fact. It's an idea. Mm-hmm. It's just like our idea of wholeness, and then there's the fact, though it may be an illusion, we feel separate. Mm-hmm. Why do we feel separate? Well, you have to look at that. And so if you go, well, the Constitution and all the things that came out of that vision, those are a true expression. Now, what happened was, of course, this is the nature of things, and they put in all these things to kind of shield from the ego, mm-hmm. because people do this. For whatever reason, you know, working with the contrasting energies, people take advantage now. So just because you have a vision of yourself or you have an idea of yourself, still there's the actualizing and the expression of that vision into reality. Mm-hmm. And people were going, well, we're the United States. This like, shut up. This doesn't happen overnight. This is like, you know, this takes some time and some suffering. The inclusion process means that people need to understand they're part of that. Mm-hmm. You can't go off on your merry way and expect others. You know, this is where the they comes in. I had an interesting experience the other day. Here I go again, other directions. We had a tea ceremony. My friend did a Chinese, and it was formal, informal, because it was funny and it was like all these things. So we're all sitting around this table, and then we started this game of like, oh, anything with the word tea in it, you know, like what? There's tons of words with tea, ecstasy. No, I forget. Well, there's tons of words with tea, and I said responsibility, and everyone went, oh. Well, first I said booty. My turn. And then when it came around again, I said, responsibility. And everyone, like the energy just went boom. But it was funny. And I realized, okay, this is the thing. We've cast a spell. A spell's been cast on the world. And I don't know if I mentioned this in the last podcast, but a spell's been cast that will not last, making common sense uncommon. To be sure, there is a cure. Nature has not forgotten. And so underneath the spell is that we've taken language, which are sound waves that are shaped in a certain way to indicate a feeling and express an emotion and a thought and et cetera, et cetera. And we've twisted the meaning of the language in so many different ways. So with the word responsibility, if you take it as like that, or you go responsibility, your ability to respond.
Yeah.
That's what it is. That to me is the true meaning. We are responsible to that.
Yeah.
And so we're not getting off that. That thing is like, so our ability is to be response able. We're okay. See if I'm getting this right. We're response able.
Yeah.
When we can do that, we can respond rather than react. Mm-hmm. So it is that's our responsibility. So it's our potential. So the vision of the United States was a potential. It's like a blueprint of what we can do as a person when all of our different senses of being, our black, white, our east, our west, all those things, when those are all united and given sovereignty, given respect, mm-hmm. then what happens is an enlightenment, a deep understanding oh, we're in this together, rather than separate. And so you can see, according to the contrast that's been of idiocy that's been laid out there, against that backdrop, you can see how silly that is. Mm-hmm. Then you can go, so what is the, what's the truth in this? So I, for me, I keep it very simple. It's like, what's the truth? Not my opinion, not my belief, just I really feel like by just having that as your underlying question, it's like, without even giving it a word, it's like, I am open to what the truth is, not my opinion. It's like, I don't care about that.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm here to just drop that shit. You know, it's like, let's move into that. Because if it's okay, if the truth is okay, which is really full inclusion, same as God, oneness, love, you know, it's like that sense of inclusion or truth, if that's our, how we're navigating, then we're all good.
Yeah.
There's abundance. There's, you know, the uncertainty is more, now instead of uncertainty being like, what am I going to do? It's like the excitement of not knowing.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know where this is going. Rather than go, oh my God, how am I going to do it? You know, it's like, so we're literally on this very fine thread, so to speak, of this and that, going this way or that. As soon as, again, you just like that sense of abundance or lack.
Yeah.
Abundance.
I think that it's definitely undeniable that nobody can live by themselves.
Right.
Interconnectability, or like the fact that we're all so interconnected and interdependent, is just undeniable. Because even if you think that you're self-sufficient and you're living by yourself in the woods, unless you built the cups that you're drinking from and sewed the clothes that you're wearing, then you're dependent on other people in some form or another. And unless you created your electricity and pulled the water from the lake, you know, there are so many things that we have and we take for granted that, you know, just a jacket, it's the people that grew the wool and the people who cut it, and then the people who made thread and sewed it together, and then the designer and the concept creator and the transportation. Like, there's so many people that have a part in making something that you might think like, oh, it's my individual style that chose this and I am self-sufficient.
Right.
You know, we don't even realize how many people affect our lives and make it possible for us to live the way that we do. And when we, and that in a way is already the inclusion of life.
That's what you just were saying, is that's abundant thinking. That's abundant express. It's like having that, always pulling in, and it's like what develops that muscle, that sense of abundant thinking is by constantly bringing your attention back to it, which is an interesting thing, because there's a pull. There's always this pull, which is, I think, just the, I think what we're feeling is our circulatory system, our interrelationship with nature. We are in a magnetic world, you know? So when we feel abundant, we can also feel, do you know what I mean? It's like we get to a point where we feel the contrast. And so then both of our eyes open. So it's a necessary step. It's like splitting open a pomegranate, I don't know, to get to the seeds. It gets so full of the juice, and finally the sun just goes, it just splits. Here comes the birds. But I have pomegranates at the house. So I always see nature explaining all this to me. Then I feel, oh, well, my response ability is, as a yoga teacher or sharer, is trying to articulate through music, words, whatever, what nature is telling me. So what I'm getting directly from just being, living here, is to articulate, you know, so you can see the thread of unity in all of these things. Like you were saying, we don't exist separately. We are a facet of a gem of a countless, you know, infinite number of things, threads, you know, so we somehow we're the weave of that. And like you said, so an abundant feeling is acknowledging and sensing that. And a feeling of lack is pulling yourself away as an individual.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, it's like, you won't feel good. Like one of the, I have read this numerous times, the worst thing you can do in a tribal sense is to kick somebody out. And like that way, if someone behaved really badly in some of the native tribes, it was just like, they cease to exist for the tribe. They literally shun them to such a degree that it's the worst thing you could do. Mm-hmm. Adam and Eve, you're out. Mm-hmm. You know, just, it's a story. You know, we're recreating the story, and each of us is then like given the, you know, in this long game, is given a pass. In other words, we came here with some amount of intent, and to wear this cloak and sort it out and then help, you know, and as you're sorting it out, like you help other people, like the thing on the airplane where they go, first put your mask on and then help your kid. So first we need to sort out our own connection to all this and then we help.
Yeah.
Sort of as best we can, you know, like.
Yeah, and I think that really, well, that's a little bit, I would say, another perspective to this, because, yeah, first of all, you need to sort out your connection to it. But in a way, I find that you hear a lot of people saying, like, you should be good by yourself, you don't need other people, like, all... And that really takes away the importance of connection. I find that in my life, connection with other people is a need, a basic human need for me, same as sleep and food, like that basic. And it's interesting what you said, that like my nephew was playing with his friends and they kind of like pushed him to the side and he felt so bad. And it's interesting that you said like that's the worst thing that you can do to somebody, like take away their human connection.
It's terrible.
Yeah. And I could just see his heart breaking. And I obviously I've been in situations like this before and I knew how he felt. And and that's why, like, sometimes when people say, like, you don't need anybody else, you should be good by yourself all the time. Like, yeah, it's important to enjoy being by yourself and be able to be by yourself. But being with people and creating life together, life isn't meant to be created by yourself.
Right.
I know for myself how I feel when I feel that all of the responsibility of making my own life is just on me alone.
Mm-hmm.
It's so scary and terrifying that I become frozen. It really paralyzes me from doing anything. And once I realize that I can do it with other people, and sometimes, or not sometimes, before that even, more than that, that it's not just me, that there is something bigger than me that is with me, co-creating my life, our life, in so many different ways, that changes. Honestly, it gives me enough confidence to do things that really scare me.
Sure. Yeah. No, I think that's what moves me as well, is that music in particular, I think, because I see all these different levels of, you know, people just learning an instrument and coming in, and how vulnerable, whether to sing in front of people and stuff. And over the years, I've become more confident, you know, in that myself. And then I can see that how nice it is when someone feels supported, like they're going to get in front of Mike for the first time and sing a song or whatever. And you go, wow, that's an empowering thing. And like you were saying, I think all of us have experienced like being the one outed, you know, and I know it's just a weird twist in the human, in humans too. And animals do it too. I mean, which is weird. Maybe that's just the animal nature of humans. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But the in sense of being accepted and having value and not letting the society's values determine it at all, but that just a heartfelt sense of we're good. Mm-hmm. You know, like even if I think you're an idiot, I was like, I can't say I've never had the feeling, you know, people show up now and then that I'll just go, what? And so I have to, you know, okay, blah, 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 you know, like,
except everybody.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, so again, there's the muscle, you know, again, keeping the owning it.
Yeah.
It's like, who's an idiot? Okay. Blah, blah, blah. You know, and then, yeah. But then when that does, as soon as like I make that adjustment, fortunately, it doesn't happen very much, and you don't need to challenge me, okay?
Yeah, I'm not calling it in.
Yeah, I was like, we're good. Is that I'm thankful that I know I can change that. I'm thankful that I can own it. I'm thankful that I am that idiot.
Yeah.
You know, I can be both. So it's like, okay, good enough. I don't.
That's true.
I can. I feel like I don't want to create a false character. Mm. I do theater and I love acting and all that stuff. And that I just recently this last year was in two different plays. One was Midsummer Night's Dream.
Cool.
And another one was the Todos Santos Newsfeed, the musical, which was just created here. But Midsummer Night's Dream was an amazing experience for me because I played the character Idris, who is at that time, very patriarchal. And the basis of it is his daughter is in love with somebody. He doesn't approve. He wants her to marry somebody else. So he goes before the Duke or the King and says, I want my, you know, the law of Athens at the time is that you have to do what your father said. It's mm-hmm. like this, or you're to death. It's like you do what he says, or you can be put to death. Okay. So I played that character. And I also played this other guy, Peter Quince, that meets these other actors in the woods at night, and they're getting ready to put on a play. And then there's the whole element of the fairy queen and the fairy king and their squabble. So all these things are looking for consent. There's this underlying, it's a play within a play, but it's all about consent and whether it's given or not. And then there's the story, the play within the play is there's these two lovers that met by moonlight, but because their parents were not on board with it, they would meet at this wall where there was a hole in the wall, and that's how they could love each other. That's how they could communicate and stuff. Mm-hmm. The sad part of the story is, well, one of the lovers thinks the other lover's killed by a lion, so they kill themselves.
Oh, like Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah. Okay. So it's again the same story. Yeah. And what happened for me in the play was amazing because once you start doing these lines over and over in your head and you finally get the rhythm of Shakespeare's mm-hmm. thing, I felt like that character or that blueprint scenario. Like Romeo and Juliet, like again, the same is I realized, oh my God, Shakespeare was so smart. This is the problem of the whole world. We're looking through this man-made or human-made wall or idea. And we are trying to have this flow between us that is very natural. It's love. You know, it's like there's this thing. But we have to do it through this small hole. Mm-hmm. And the hole, I realized, were the conditions and beliefs of a society, which it was then too. If you don't do this properly,
Mm-hmm. Then you're not accepted.
You're not accepted. I have imposed upon myself through time that the only way I can love another person is through these accepted modes. They have to behave this way, mm-hmm. or you follow me?
Yeah.
And so as simple as that idea is, it was profound for me because I realized this is what the problem is. The world is, we are, have accepted this limited way of seeing each other.
Yeah.
That those conditions, the rock are the, and beliefs are the rocks and mortar in that wall.
Yeah. And seeing ourselves.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. I think you really touched on the core of what we began speaking about, because really, like, thinking that you need all these things external to yourself, or you need to be a certain type of person,
right.
is really at the core, comes down to, will I be accepted? Will I be loved? Right. Will I be part of the group, the tribe, which is our most basic right. longing?
Yeah.
And in a way, we kind of have this illusion that those things will make us be accepted.
Right. Yeah.
Interesting. Hey, I'm quickly interrupting the episode to extend an invitation. If you are interested in deepening into any of the subjects we talk about on the podcast, we offer many different experiences on our beautiful grounds here in Baja, Mexico. From 9-day modules such as sound healing and yoga nidra, to breath and meditation, as well as 200- or 300-hour yoga teacher trainings, and many different shorter retreats. Check out our website, yandara.com, to see all the information about the different experiences. Let's get back to the episode.
And we need the part where the consent is, so this is the other spice in this play is, and also the fairy queen. So another interesting part of this story is Theseus is getting married. Now, Theseus is the king or the duke in this case. And he's marrying Hippolyta, who is the queen of the Amazons, who he conquered in battle. And by default, he's saying, I wed thee, I won thee by conquering thee, but I wed thee in another key.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's going along with it. So consent. Did she give it? No, he had to overcome her.
Mm-hmm.
Same with now Aegeus, this character who's the father of this of his daughter, who he loves. It's totally tearing up, but she's going to do what he says or this. It's like mm-hmm. consent again. So in the end, he has to give that up because she ends up being with the one she really loves.
Mm-hmm.
And now the fairy king, because the fairy queen won't do what he wants, he gets Puck, the fairy, you know, to sprinkle the stuff in her eyes. So whoever she wakes up and sees, which is an ass, it's a donkey, well, she'll fall in love with.
Uh-huh.
Again, no consent. He did it to her. Mm-hmm. So while she was dreaming. But and again, the same thing. The story is this happened without our consent.
Yeah.
So
it was kind of passed down generations.
So our responsibility mm-hmm. is to break that wall down.
Yeah.
And the way we do it, that's an individual thing. So individually, I'm not going to impose my beliefs on anybody. I will dissolve my ability, my responsibility is to dissolve my wall and be open. In other words, open the space between me and you. So there's no, I don't have to love you through some agency. I can just love you because you are you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's a simple thing. Yeah. Now, if I had in my intention to somehow get over on you, seduce you, blah, 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 then there is what starts karma, in my understanding. Karma's nothing. Karma's just what's happening now. And it's like, well, that it's a spin from before. Yeah, well, of course, because we're moving forward. So, but what causes the karma or makes the road rough
mm-hmm.
is that if I have an intention to manipulate an outcome that is not in your best interest, and I'm involving you, that creates a karmic loop with us.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden we've set a condition that, you know, and of course, usually you attract someone that also is trying to put you into a spin of their own, because we are living in that circle.
Yeah.
But when we go, but if, so this is what the play revealed to me, playing these characters, is like, oh, you take this character off, you put it on. It's like, I'm Bolo until I put on Aegis. Mm-hmm. And I start, it's like, oh, I became kind of unhinged in this process.
In your identity.
Yeah.
Cool.
It became pretty profound for me. And I wasn't around a lot of people except for the theater. And I was doing Yandar, but spending a lot of time on my own. Kind of, and I, simultaneously, which is strange, my dad's getting ready to die. Mm. He died April Fool's Day. Kind of funny. But I just noticed the connectedness of everything in that. It's like, okay, my dad's dying. He, in a sense, gave to me my basic constitution, in a certain way, upbringing, seeing through his lens, seeing. Now, he's gone.
Yeah.
And symbolically, so it wasn't so sad because I was with the whole process, you know, like with him, I saw him a lot. We had a really good relationship. And it felt like he didn't really die. He just kind of moved inside. Same with my mom. Like they left their body, but where'd they go? You know, same that they're still feel it. Still feel, you know, all the that. So it wasn't sad. I think the sadness, if there any sadness, was family. You know, everyone's different reaction. So again, back to the play. So we're in this play. So if we can let those things go, again, so bringing it back to attachment. If we're attached, we'll suffer to the degree of our attachment.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of
simple. Yeah, but I think it's really hard. I've experienced the death of like really tragic deaths.
That's different.
Recently.
Yeah.
Luck. I won't say that, but once removed, let's say, so a brother, another brother, a daughter of people around me.
Yeah.
In this situation, how can you not be attached? You know, somebody dying at 27.
Sure.
29.
Well, again, like the example of my father was one where it saw its completion, you know.
Yeah.
Now, when someone goes early, suddenly, like you said, tragically, I don't think there's a way you can't. You're human, you know, so we're here to experience that too. And so I don't look for an out on that, you know, as far as the experience, the other thing is, what is, are you going to do with it? It's like one thing to philosophize. The other thing is to be realized. You know, and to realize when you're in that and you've had that experience, like someone dies or, like you said, some tragedy, is we need to use those things to reflect on the impermanence of things and make it a larger understanding. You know, it's like, yeah, life does that and, you know,
inevitable.
It's the inevitable, but what you do with that gift, again, it has to become a gift. Our job, I feel, or our responsibility is to transform, alchemize, whatever you want to call it, these situations into fuel for understanding. Because if you don't, you'll, you know, regrets and all the other crap that are kind of they're the tail end of the parade of the big five. You know, like the lust, pride, greed, anger, attachment.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it. That's their family.
Yeah.
That extended family, you'll that's why you see in families in particular is conflict. And you're, it seems like people are often born, their biggest conflicts are in their families. Kind of tough.
Yeah.
I've definitely seen that.
Definitely.
But
that's my, after this one, I'm recording an episode with Christopher. That's the topic.
Family.
Yep.
I really appreciate your, you know, including me in this, and because I think the it's a conversation, it's important to have.
Yeah.
You know, and again, for me, I think I go all over in things because I feel like a conversation is like a river. It goes and it meanders, it stops, it flows, it waterfalls, etc.
Yes, apparently. And there's a waterfall in the I love that.
Yeah, you know, and I think, you know, I've got all this, I got this recording equipment like last year. I still haven't figured it out. But really, I'm more interested, you know, whether it's recording or something, is the human element of, I mean, people, I think people want to hear imperfection. I think people want to, that it's the human quality. It's like something can be so polished and you go, it just bores the crap out of me.
Yeah, definitely. You
know? But where you see, you know, like a person is really on the edge of themselves and that's interesting.
I want to go back to kind of what we were talking about in terms of like being accepted and the source of scarcity and abundance. I think something I want to mention, especially about families, because you did mention like sometimes we do things because our parents tell us that we have to.
Right.
And I think so many of us are in this trap that we shape our lives according to what our parents want from us, maybe mostly, but also like what we think society wants of us, again, in the pursuit of being accepted. So I just thought that was something I want to mention because we need to become aware of that. Just starting to be aware, like, am I doing this because that's what my parents expect of me? Or am I doing this because that's what I really want to do? Is that my dharma, my path, my biggest and truest and most contribution is to the world, or to the world, or is it because of something, a perception that I have?
Right.
And that also leads me to kind of a question I wanted to ask you, which is kind of something that I am still finding the balance with. And it's the balance between being truthful and being accepted. Because in my experience, I have found that my natural tendency is to be very truthful. Sometimes to the point that maybe it's too direct and then people close up.
Right.
And then what happens is that I don't feel accepted. And it really, I find that it is a very delicate balance here of like how can you be truthful and express your truth. I also think this is like a double standard that women have, especially like you have to speak your mind and stand up for yourself, but be very polite and very, let's say, honestly, quiet and like not very heard.
Seen but not heard.
Exactly. That old, so maybe you have a word of advice on that.
Yeah, that's a good one. The parent trap. It comes back to that same thing of what will make the energy move. So that if as soon as you have this sense that stuckness, because it shows up like a little flag or in the head, it's like a tap on the shoulder or whatever, when you are not being authentic to your real nature, and that you're voicing what you've been imprinted with. And it's tricky to know the difference because it's literally emotionally glued into your system, and to see the world according to how you've been told the world is. And now when that starts falling apart, when that wall, again, so that this is how you will receive love and nurturing through this agency, you know. So we're set up. Our system is set to that. Anything contrary to that now will be a disturbance. Mm-hmm. So what, as yogis or inclusive people, what we're doing then is dissecting, in a way, digging out what the truth is, like you, what you were saying, your truthful person. So your core is sensitive to things that don't harmonize with your, what you feel is true. Now, I think it will continually happen that you'll find out, that was a mistake. Oh, that was a mistake. Again, but good. Make a bunch of mistakes. You know, it's like, this is how you go, because all you're doing in what it shows is a questioning. It's a quest. We're on a quest. So everything we're going to do is questing to express that truth we feel. We're motivated by this natural opening. Like we're like, again, like the lotus or a flower. We are that. We are blossoming, evolving, right, mm-hmm. people. Now, you can look at a tree, like, again, the nature analogy is a tree will have all kinds of leaves, and you can look at that as a person's experiences, all the leaves, right? And as those things fall in the fall, what's left is a bare tree. And so the core truth, so you see the, you can see that they're, I don't know if this is a good analogy or not, but you can feel that what's true to you, because it rings true. Mm-hmm. It rings true. You feel it, reverberates in you like, yeah. That's right. And you also can smell the bullshit. It's like the more honest and truthful you are, the more obvious the bullshit is.
Yeah, but I think it's not always, I think you brought up a very interesting point, because it is stuck to us like yeah. glue. Like sometimes what we think is our truth is actually the conditioning that we yeah. received.
Yeah.
And really looking in and seeing like, is this my truth that I'm expressing, or is it my ego or fear or...
Well, yeah, exactly. You know, I think this has become really, in the last few years, really pronounced mm-hmm. to really... It's obvious, you know, things are becoming obvious. And when you feel like you need to defend it is, to me, kind of the indicator.
Yeah.
Because if you don't need to defend it, well, who cares? You know, it's like live and let live. Again, the inclusion means that's included as well. Mm-hmm. And but if you, as soon as you feel like you need to defend your point of view, you're lost, because you don't have their point of view. You have your point of view.
Yeah.
But if you, this is a repeating scenario for me, is like, if you want to have both of your eyes open and your third eye, that means that you include that other person's perspective. You don't need to believe it. Mm-hmm. But your eye is open, my eye sense, their eye sense. Two, the third is the common, the third eye to me really indicates, or that intuitive self, is the inclusion of another person's perspective. Whether you see through that lens as well, you're allowing for it no matter what. You just allow it. Now, it doesn't mean they can come and do things to you. It just means emotionally, psychically, you can think whatever you want, you know? And that way, withdrawing from the karmic wheel that way, because by allowing, you're not dividing things and separating things into little pieces that may match or not. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's like you're, by allowing for someone to be a complete wacko in their, how they think or whatever, just like, it's a play. Yeah, you do that, because what you know, as soon as they've exhausted themselves, this they or them, when they've exhausted themselves, because you just sit there calm, you know, then they're going to go, they'll get to the part where they go, well, what? They'll come to the question. So I think my responsibility or whatever is to help come to the question. Like we don't need any answers. What we need is really good questions, mm-hmm. because questions just move obstacles out of the way. Mm. By questioning their truth, because if you say you're searching for truth, you want to know what is true, just bottom line. Yeah. So that is a big searchlight. Because the truth now, instead of being somewhere in front of you, the truth is now shining through you because you've questioned the things that are not true.
Yeah.
As soon as you move those things out, what happens? The light just comes through. It just happens. Mm-hmm. And so questions are the important thing. So like, you know, what you're doing, you know, asking questions and what we're doing, you know, if you think about the world, people go, well, I don't know what I could do out there. I'm going to, how to change it, change the world. And it's like, nah. This is how we do it. Mm-hmm. What you and I are doing now. We're living proof that the truth is expressing itself. Yeah. That the problems of the world have always been there. They're global now, whatever. This is still what we're doing. The truth is still it's now the more glorious explosion of possibilities as the shell is coming off, as the volcano is blowing up, as all these things are happening in the world, all the separateness and war and all this nonsense it's being revealed. Now you can take the spin of like, oh, it's terrible. It's like some things are getting better. Some things are getting worse. Mm. Some say it's a blessing. Some say it's a curse. Yeah. So if it's like, what lens will include that energy that will question the very foundation of the illusion? Mm-hmm. First, we do it to ourselves.
Yeah.
Then, as that grows in conviction, and again, it's your true self, then I think of it as the story of Durga. I'm not going to tell the whole thing, but it basically, a demon takes over the world. Look familiar? Sound familiar? And all the plants die, and all things are going bad. And he said the gods put all their good energy together, and Durga is formed. Mm. And out of Durga, and Durga then defeats this guy because he wants to, you know, have his way with her. And she goes, "Well, the only way you can do that, you got to beat me in battle." And he's going, "Oh, no problem," you know. Mm-hmm. She whips his ass. So anyways, again, the analogy is when you and I have these conversations and you have conversations with other people, what we're doing is we are those gods. That's the story in the book, you know, the gods put their best sense. Like, well, who are they? Mm-hmm. So if we are them in this case, in the sense that we're putting in all our best intentions to know the truth, right, and express it. So you put that, and out of our collective offering into this, Durga, or the mystery, it's like mystery will now erase the history that is false. Mm-hmm. So that's what's happening in the world right now.
Yeah.
It's not popular because it's not newsworthy in the sense of TV, and who cares? What is it? Because you can see most of the world is about maintaining a wall of division, but this sense of inclusion and allowing the feminine, I call it the feminine, the mother energy, you know, like for me, that's, it says it all, because from mother, we are born. What gives us birth is we are connected and it is us, mm-hmm. right? So this great mystery that is us, the divine mother, you know, like now we are just reoffering what she gave us, which is the vision of a united states mm-hmm. of mind, of yeah. of an we're expressing this vision no matter what. Mm-hmm. This is happening. So by us allowing, just going, okay, yeah. we're saying to our source, I totally trust you. Mm. I totally accept you. I totally have faith in you. And there's no dogma. It's not a religion. It is the united vision. It's inclusive vision. And by holding that or embracing that, attachment goes away. It seems like it's like the big attachment. Mm. It's the one that doesn't go away. It's the one that we are. Mm. And so by just connecting with that and then consciously making that offering back, not frittering it away by trying to manipulate others into some kind of separative way of thinking, but by going, okay, you know, it's like, why did they try to kill all the witches? Why did they try? You know, it's like, again, a tangent for me. Why do they do this? Because they don't want you to know this. They. Hence they. Yeah. So they, okay, here's another song I have. It's very short. It goes, who are they but I, seen from far away, through a filter, through a screen, through a culture, through a dream? Mm. Who are they? They don't exist. Mm-hmm. So what my thing or whatever you call it is like, I'm erasing them because they don't exist. It's not even me erasing them. It's like, okay, Durga in this case, or as the analogy, is by us uniting, by us just having this connection, me and you, mm-hmm. and you and whoever you meet, the more that that takes place, it's the 100th monkey thing. Like, there is no, then the support for the false narrative, it starts crumbling. That wall through which we are loving each other through this little aperture is going away. And like, you can totally trust me.
Yeah.
I don't want anything from anybody. But it doesn't mean I don't have thoughts. It doesn't mean I don't, when I dip into this world, it doesn't mean I'd see, if I see, oh, someone that's beautiful, I go, well, she's beautiful or he's beautiful or whatever, you know, whatever that is. Like, I acknowledge that. There is a lot of beauty around. It's like, but I don't have to make it. I don't have to like separate it out and try to make it mine. Mm. It is beautiful because I haven't done that. Mm. Its beauty is because it shines by itself. Yeah. It's just shining, you know? Yeah. So
yeah, definitely.
I know. I really have got into that Durga story along with the Ramayana and these others as a, not just a prophecy, but a living, metaphor and myth that is actualizing right now before our eyes.
Yeah.
Is by us letting that flow through happen and just going, trusting in this mysterious force. It's like we're trying to, oh, we have to do a war because if we do this, you know, manipulation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's like how crazy it is to manipulate and lie. Because they just follow each other around. You know, it's like, you can't, you got to keep it going.
Yeah.
And to me, the way it works for me is that, is you have to see the root of your own ego and how, and not divide yourself in any way from the war or all. It's just like, take out the stops.
Yeah.
So the flow through can happen in the global, in the cosmic level. Rather than just going, oh, I'm okay, blah, 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 you know.
Yeah, and I think that you're right, that the guiding question or the guiding force is like, where is the truth in this?
Yeah, it's like the truth will set you free. Mm-hmm. You know the truth and the truth will set you free because that's a big thing. Mm-hmm. Because then that means a lot in the sense because that, are we willing to be free? Mm. Can we do that? Because it's pretty powerful thing, and I think that's why so many people are, you know, yoga leaders, whatever, they get caught in, and anybody can get stuck in it. As soon as you start this seductiveness, whatever you want to call it, manipulation, to create an outcome that benefits you and not somebody else. It's mm-hmm. like, I think there's some like test things where you can dip your finger and go, maybe not. You know what I mean? It's like a classic example for me. If my partner's been gone for almost a year, I feel young in my own mind. I see women are attractive. I still see all that. And at the same time, it's like if I just dipped my finger into the idea of doing, and it's like I can get a sense of like I don't need to put on the whole outfit. Yeah. You know, and it's like, because if I have to be honest with myself, you know, and go, yes, I feel these things, but I don't want to I don't want to create karma mm-hmm. when I can see that if I put the whole self in,
yeah,
I'm creating again a situation. I would have to manipulate. I would have to try to contrive a situation.
Yeah.
And so that right away is like the effort involved in order to create the situation is a warning sign to me that just like, no, stay with yourself. Stay in yourself.
You can tell that though because you have experience. Like we learn that as we get older. Exactly. And we have those experiences and we notice, okay, that didn't feel good. Sometimes it takes us more than one time to do it to realize that doesn't feel good until we realize we want to act differently.
Yeah.
Great. So just to wrap this up, because I think we have so much amazing information here and I really appreciate all the beautiful perspectives that you that you gave. I'll ask you the last question. What are you curious about right now, Bolo?
What am I curious? I told you.
Yeah, something about that. I thought that's what you were going to say.
Yeah, no, I'm very curious about, like I was just saying about the Durga, this feeling that it's like the greatest movie you've ever seen that's going on in the world right now. So much action, so much this, so many. It's like, it's really the common sense, the spell of the, like I said, a spell's been cast that will not last. But right now the spell is really grinding mm-hmm. good. Mm-hmm. But the more it presses, the more the untruth of it starts raveling, the threads of that weave, because they're not honest. They don't vibrate mm-hmm. with nature. They're like plastic. They don't vibrate and they don't biodegrade.
Yeah.
So what you have is like, this is pretty obvious, but what is not able to be calculated by these great minds and computers is spontaneity. Mm-hmm. And the goddess, the divine mother, whatever you want to call the source, is pure spontaneity and pure electricity. Yeah. It will not wear that. It's too limiting. Yeah. It won't wear global domination.
Yeah.
It's too limiting.
Yeah.
It does not give credence to the ego being so important, or a group of men or a group of people. They don't exist.
Unfortunately, I think sometimes things need to come to like a peak before they start.
It's a big pimple.
Changing. It needs to pop.
Yeah. No, true. No, true. But totally true.
There's a lot of like nasty stuff coming.
Oh, yeah. It's like, you know, the thing is, again, it's the contrast. And when you, again, can make, we make this little, this jump, like the Hanuman jump, where instead, because it's so bad, the idea is you do this. Mm. It's not me.
You back away.
You back away because of the horrible news. Yeah. Or you allow the big picture. See, it's allowing that force, it's Jedi terms. It's allowing the full power of what is to take place mm-hmm. rather than you trying to articulate a a response to it that is made of your past, it can't address this new problem.
Yeah.
Our recycled information cannot address that problem because it is made of lies and manipulations. Mm-hmm. This ego is made of lies and manipulations, and the only thing that holds it together is the belief that it is contrived upon whatever. It's votees or whatever. Yeah. It's believers. So that's what interests me now, is just like seeing and trusting that it almost seems impossible. And I go, that's what makes it so exciting, is that, okay, good. Come riding in on that big white horse, however you want to do it, or tiger.
Yeah. There's this quote, I don't exactly remember it, but it's from The Course in Miracles, and it says, whatever is true can't be threatened, and what is untrue can never last, or something like that. I said it wrong, but...
I know what you
mean. Yeah. Well, Bolo.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been lovely and fun and very informative.
Okay.
Now, after this time to nurture your mind and your spirit, we invite you to take a moment to consider others. A kind wish might come to mind. Know that what we learn becomes more valuable when we apply it and share it with others. So share this episode on Instagram stories, tag Yandara and I, or share with a loved one so that more people can benefit from it. Our hope is that the search will lead you home to who you already are, to what was always there. We'll be back next week with more inspiration, honest conversation, and insight into the energetic world around us. Thank you for listening and watching.